Card presents Back Issue Bloodbath with your hosts, Andrew Young and Petula Neal.
What if there was a comic that was like Ocean's 11, but instead of it being Ocean and 10 other people, it was five badass super people characters in the DC universe? And instead of a regular heist for an item or an amount of money, it was instead for a person. And instead of a casino, it was Themyscira, protected by a ton of Amazons. That sounds like a million-dollar idea to me, in my opinion. How about you?
It's amazing.
Welcome to Back Issue Bloodbath. I'm Andrew Young.
I'm Petula Neal.
And this week, we are talking about just that very type of story, Birds of Prey. As we are talking about it, the sixth issue just dropped the day before. I got a chance to read it, but we'll definitely be talking about the first five in great detail. It is the most recent incarnation of the Birds of Prey, written by Kelly Thompson, with artwork by Leonardo Romero and colors by Jordi Belair. Yes, this is the team that brought you Kate Bishop Hawkeye, with a special appearance in issue five by Aris Dayen as the artist. I've gotten a chance to talk with Kelly Thompson about this story, but I just remember when I heard the premise of the book, that it was Black Canary has to get a team together, recreate the Birds of Prey, so she can save her sister Sin, her adopted sister Sin. And I was like, oh, that's a fun idea. And then when I heard, it's like, they have to go to Themyscira, and they can't tell the Amazons what they're doing, but they've got to get Sin off that island without anybody knowing. Can they do it? And it's, you know, when you hear it's Themyscira, you're like, well, no, they're definitely not going to be able to, and all hell's going to break loose. The hell breaking loose is the most fun I've read in a superhero comic in probably about 5 years.
There were multiple moments in reading these first five where I'm like, okay, screenshot, note to self, when we get to the year end, best panel of the year, like, it won't even, I'm sure we'll read other great stuff. I'm sure I'll read other great stuff. But I feel like of when I'm narrowed down from like top 20, top 10, there's going to be at least three from just these first five issues.
Right, right.
It's just great shenanigans. And the way each character's fighting style is portrayed in some of those melee fights, they're all very unique. And the way they play off each other, it's just fantastic. A visual feast from literally the first part of the Ocean's 11 recruitment. And even before that, when we start with homie Green Arrow Bet, and I was like, how many issues or even just how many stories or conversation breaks just have old homie shirtless in bed? Like, I...
Well, and now actually, I'm thinking with like Canary, Canary and Ollie, that's actually a common starting place for them.
If anything, now in the rear view, it's like it seemed like the TV show was being gratuitous with it, but now it's like they maybe had him dressed too often.
Let's break down this team. So your main characters of the team are, of course, Black Canary. She's the star of the book. And Cassandra Cain has been picked, of course. As it's said in here by King Shark, everybody's favorite Batman. And there's Big Barda, who, my God, she would give Thor a run for his money. I'm not talking about just a fight. I'm talking about just having offhanded funny lines where the character doesn't know they're being funny. Then you've got Zealot, who is probably the darkest member of the team, who not only has, you know, such a intense past and everything like that. And like, basically it's a group full of killers, but she is the killer of the killers. So much so we'll talk a little bit later how she has to actually put herself in a position where she can't kill, because that's her one thing, is that she doesn't want to kill on this mission because she don't kill Amazons. And then you think, so this is a pretty hardcore badass team, but just like Ocean's 11, we need one more.
We need one more.
Yeah, we need one more. And so Cassandra actually says, hey, how about Harley Quinn? And they all look at her like, are you fucking nuts? And she's like, now hear me out. And she, in her mind, is presenting a story of, I was, you know, trying to track down what was happening with, you know, this robbery or whatever. And Harley Quinn was there also trying to track it down. And she got pissed because she said, this is my investigation. Beat the crap out of me. I beat the crap out of her. And it was kind of a stalemate. We both fell out of the building. But of course, it's Cassandra Cain. She's a woman of few words. So while we, the readers, see this flashback, she probably said maybe like three lines. Wasn't as convincing to the birds themselves, but they eventually go along with it. And it sets up such a fun dynamic of Harley Quinn is the unwanted bird of prey, and Canary is just nonstop. She's riding her. But Harley keeps coming through and also keeps making sense. And that's what scares Dinah more than anything. And it's this dynamic. I love this team dynamic in this book.
She adds a little jazz to it.
Yeah.
They have their moves, their, especially the case of Cassandra, anybody who's part of the Bat family, very classically trained.
Yeah.
But you need somebody who can think on their feet, color outside the lines, or, you know, stab and or smash a bat outside the lines, and coming up with ways that people don't expect, especially when you're going for a stealthy infiltration kind of activity. I think this was the best choice.
It is a great team. You got Cassandra Cain, who's great itself. You got Big Barda, who, if you're going to a place where there's Amazons, particularly Wonder Woman, you want to have the toughest person you can find. And a freaking new god is pretty fucking tough.
And she's great for locker room chemistry, honestly. Yeah.
Zealot, an assassin, Stone Cold Killer, Harley Quinn, there for the unexpected, but also for reading, there for the comic relief. And then Canary, who is the master planner of the situation. Now, there are probably some of you who haven't read this story out there that are thinking, so why can't they just tell the Amazons that, hey, we need Canary's sister back? Well, they can't trust the Amazons because one of the Amazons has been corrupted by an entity that is later revealed to be known as Megara. Megara is basically a spirit that is looking for a host, and she's all powerful, but with a host she'll become 10 times more powerful and try to bring about the end of humanity. And she has infected one of the Amazons there, and so if they were to let the Amazons know what was happening, Megara would find out and the jig would be up, because Megara wants Sin to be the new host. That's the whole reason why the person she was inhabiting convinced the Amazons that, oh, you guys have to take Sin into custody and keep her safe. What they don't know is that they were serving her up on a platter. And so Canary and them are going in to stop that and save Sin.
But respectfully, because she builds an old lady team. It's like, listen, I know people don't roll up on Themyscira. Hell, even Amazons, once they're asked to get to stepping, they often aren't invited back. If we're going to break in, we're going to deal with a bunch of gals.
Well, yeah, but also that's Canary always goes with an all-lady team. The Birds of Prey don't have any men on them. It's like... So I guess, sure, it was a respect thing, but I think it was also like, this is how I do shit. The whole thing with the Megara thing, I was like, what's this character going to be like? Like, when the character's introduced, it's kind of viney. It's a bunch of vines. It's a mask. We don't really know what she's all about, but as the story progresses, she becomes just more and more like scary. There is no softer side to this character. This character just wants death and destruction and wants to do it from Sin's body and wants to kill Sin to have her body and everything like that. But in issue 5, I don't know if you noticed this, of course, the artwork changes. You saw that. But
Like a sharp change. And again, we have another beautiful Themyscira panel.
Yeah.
And like Wonder Woman was like super hot in the first look. And then it's so much. It's a lot. It's so pretty. So pretty. Both are pretty.
Yeah. So the thing was, is that they, for the first 6-issue story, Kelly Thompson knew I can only have Leonardo Romero for 5 of those issues. That's just the way the schedule works out. But he's got to do the last issue of the story because I really want to bring this home. So she decided, I'm going to write issue 5 differently because we're going to have a different artist. If you notice, there's no Canary captions. It's the only issue that is not narrated by the Black Canary, because the idea is that we're seeing now the world from Megara's eyes. And so that's why everything
insides kind of.
Well, no, yeah, with it, but I'm saying like that's why everything looks different is because this is how Megara sees the world. And I thought that was an interesting thing. Now, she really couldn't set that up in her writing. And so it was just like, it's a vibe that you got to feel sort of thing. But when you hear that, that it's like, oh, that issue is what the world is like for Megara. That brings like another layer to that issue, in my opinion. Brings a cool level to it.
The way you described Megara is, you know, that's fair, your point of view. However, I was like, when she explains herself and says, listen, I'm not just throwing myself in any old person. Consent. Which...
Okay. Yeah. No. But that is only, you're making it sound like she was like, I respect you. She can't take over a body properly if she doesn't get the consent. She's fucking selfish here. Okay. Stop trying to set her up like, oh, well, I'm doing something nice. She can't control the body without the consent.
I'm just saying she's not all bad.
I'm saying I don't think so. But anyways, I don't think if you talk to the Amazons or anybody, the Birds of Prey, or Sin, really, if she'd think, oh, yeah, no, actually, she's misunderstood. It's like, no, they'd be like, no, you've really fucked up all our lives. So, and you've done it for selfish means. That's what I'm saying.
She has an objective that does not necessarily take the needs of others to, like, continue to exist into account. But I'm just saying, I did like the consent. It was a nice touch.
Yeah, and I'm saying, yeah, the consent, though, wasn't like a gesture. That's what I'm saying. So I don't really feel like it speaks to her character, in my opinion. Doesn't really speak to her character. That's the way you're presenting it. That's what I'm saying. It's like, no, I'm not buying this. Have you had a chance to read issue 6? Because I know it just came out.
No, I haven't.
The end is a really cool wrap-up. I really like the way the things went. There is a big reveal in the 6th issue on why from issue 1 that the teleporter that's helping them, Meridian, says that Barbara Gordon can't be involved in the story. And when you hear it, it's like, oh, that's pretty fucking cool. And it will lead into the next story coming from the Birds of Prey. So I'm very excited about that. But let's face it, this book, while it's a greatly plotted story and the characters are amazing and there's tons of great character work, the fights are legendary. In fact, when we did our best comics of the year last year, my favorite fight was between Big Barda and Wonder Woman. But when I went back and read that, I knew that Wonder Woman also fought with Cassandra Cain in the issue, but I completely forgot that she tussled a bit with Zealot as well. Wonder Woman gets in like triple duty here. She gets her steps in and also kicks the crap out of Green Arrow, too.
While people keep calling her princess. And she's like, the kicks and punches I can take, but please stop calling me princess.
Yeah. See, well, that's the thing. You got to play mental warfare as well. So, but I do find it funny that even long before Wonder Woman shows up, Big Barda and Harley Quinn only refer to her as the princess. They do not call her Wonder Woman for most of the book. It's always the princess. Yeah.
It's so respectfully disrespectful. I love it. Yeah. Also, yeah. Little Bat. Like, Big Barda just likes, she's one of those people who gives somebody a nickname that will drive them crazy, but they'll be charmed a little bit, but they won't admit it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, well, Big Barda is just, she's great in this. Also, the odd friendship with Harley Quinn and Big Barda in this is a lot of fun. It's basically Harley Quinn continually having foot and mouth disease, where she continually starts to say something that Barda would find offensive in explaining her, like, this big ass bitch and stuff like that. And each time Barda just has to go, Harley, and she changes up, bisexual icon, you know, sort of thing. This big ass bisexual icon. And it's like, those little moments were fantastic. In fact, like the little relationships that they set up in this are just so much fun, but I really enjoyed the Harley Quinn, Big Barda banter almost as much as I enjoyed the Big Barda Wonder Woman throwdown.
Harley in general coming in and just having that tough rooms, this thing on vibe from jump all the way through, just
with
constantly.
major pick me energy.
Yeah. She's trying to do crowd work, but they are not engaged. Like, nobody's hit the 2-drink minimum yet. And it's icy. She's doing, like in so many Harley stories, what she does best, having her own little kind of side run in terms of her vibe, her energy, what she's trying to achieve mentally. She's just trying to have a good time, but she's very objective focused.
Oh, yeah.
But she's just like, just because it's work doesn't mean we can't enjoy ourselves.
It was so much fun reading her in this story. Unfortunately, I believe both Harley Quinn and Zealot will not be in the next story arc, because what they have to do in the next story arc, basically Canary needs to form a new team for it. It seems like every mission Canary is going to be putting together a slightly different Birds of Prey. Some people are going to stick around, like I'm pretty sure Big Barda and Cassandra Cain are sticking around for the next arc, but Zealot and Harley will not be. I'm not sure, like, I didn't really get to touch on it with Kelly. This could be an editorial issue, or this could be Kelly picking the right team for the stories, like putting together teams specifically for the stories she wants to tell. And I think we're going to get a lot of fun in the next arc after this. My God, I hope Leonardo Romero stays on for another arc, because, well, we've talked about this before when we've talked about the Black Widow series that Kelly Thompson wrote with Elena Casagrande. She really loves the scenes where you see the heroes go through the fight completely in like a big double page spread. I found out recently that that's referred to as the DeLuca effect, named after Gianna DeLuca, who perfected this this idea, repeating the action and dialogue across. DeLuca apparently did it with a artistic adaptation of Hamlet, and it came from there. So the idea is that you are following the images of these two characters throughout, while the rest of the scene is remaining static. And Leonardo Romero is just amazing at this. If you look at issue one, of course, the Batgirl, Black Canary fighting the Assassin's Guild on the rooftop, they do it there. And then, as I brought up, is one of my favorite panels in Best Of at the end of last year, the Black Canary, Sin, and Harley Quinn fighting through just like a barrage of Amazons through the forest, and then eventually getting caught by two Amazons at the end. Like, you gotta love the fucking DeLuca effect. It is just, Romero does it great. Kelly Thompson always finds the perfect spots in her scripts to drop it in. It's just, you know, it's beautiful.
And what they do with the colors in the first four, it's creating this kind of old-timey newsprint effect. So it gives,
which I feel is kind of a classic kind of thing for Jordi Belair. Jordi Belair has done that in a number of books. In fact, even did it in the Kate Bishop series with Kelly Thompson and Leonardo Romero. It's a really cool effect, definitely.
And it's so precise and conservative with the colors, especially when you have only one or two characters in a set of panels or a page. And then as you layer in, like folding in the cheese, each character as they build the team, then you get a little more and a little more and a little more, until there's some moments where it's like literally each character's kind of color story is just gently like a watercolor blending in with each other. And then in the fifth, when they do the artist switch, you get this like barrage of like, this is more maybe what people think of kind of like crispy, shiny comic book color. Each character's just like a bam.
Yeah.
And the Wonder Woman boots, the gold on the boots in issue 5. Yeah. Anyway, but the juxtaposition of that, I love then going back to that first panel where it's just, it's very Green Arrow color. It's like they're waking up in bed, Ollie shirtless. It's just all like just the green tones and the muted and like the yellow Dinah's hair and all of that. And then it's the progression, and there's your real point of where the team is, they're solidified, but it's still chaotic. That's when we have sort of the combination of Zealot and Harley. Their energy, so murdery and so at times presenting as moronic, but really masterful in the case of Harley. That's when like all of the 24 size Laurentia box comes out of King Shark's mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's just,
I love the fact that you see, yeah, that's the other thing as well, is that this book very much reminds you that it's like, oh no, this takes place in the DC universe. It's a lived in universe. So it's not just the Birds of Prey, the Amazons, and Wonder Woman. You've also got appearances by King Shark, Green Arrow, John Constantine. In issue 6, there is an appearance by Barbara Gordon. And they all have their little moments. King Shark, of course, he owes Harley Quinn, and Harley Quinn has basically said, I'm going to get you to the island. King Shark's going to help us. And King Shark's like, yeah, so I love his original explanation. I'm King Shark, you know, so I'm the king of all sharks. And Megalodons are sharks, so I'm the king of them too. And it's like, okay, get to the point. So you guys are all going to get inside this shark, this Megalodon, and travel. And don't worry, just hang on to the net inside. You'll be fine. And to hear it's like, hey, yeah, you want to get inside this big carcass that can easily digest and devour you just so you can get to the island? Yeah, it's going to be fine. It's like they are not having it. And yeah,
transpo. It is basically that scene in every kind of action movie where, you know, oh, we'll get in the cargo plane or the boxcar or whatever, but instead it's a shark.
Yeah, yeah. And then Green Arrow, of course, he's got the shirtless moment at the beginning, but we later on that he actually has a contingency plan for Canary. Canary has set him up back in the U.S. to do a really dirty job if needs to be done. And then John Constantine. It's always fun to have Constantine pop up in these things because he reacts always in the same way. It's like, oh, fuck, we got to go do something fine. All right, come with me. And in that, he basically has made a deal with Canary that he's like, I'm going to give you a special bag of magic tricks, but I don't keep it here. I keep it in a hidden magic realm that's almost like a gigantic market. It's a place for, like, you know, beggars and thieves of the magic world hang out sort of thing. And it's called The Seam. Now, Kelly Thompson, when she was writing the story, she was like, she asked her editors and stuff. She's like, is there like a magic place in the DC universe where like this would kind of happen? And she couldn't find one. So she decided to just say, okay, we're making one. It's called The Seam. And the idea is that there's certain places that you can find it. And magic people basically cut a hole and then they sew it up again to get in and out. And Constantine takes Canary there, and the other birds, because they need to get certain things, kind of end up there as well. Kelly had no idea that Leonardo and Jordy were going to make such a cool-looking place that now she's like, I really hope everybody puts stories in there. I want to find a way to get back there as soon as possible. Because, yeah, issue 2, it's all about that place. It's all about The Seam.
I love John in general just seeming like just so bedraggled and bothered as he does. He does always make you want a cigarette. Cigarettes are bad, they'll kill you. But every time I see him, I'm just like, it's just the sweet suckle of death. Anyway, his whole vibe, I was like, I love knowing that it's not just that we're just bumping into anyone. We're bumping into everyone's kind of like favorite people. Just the tip, just a little bit. They're serving the story. So it's still very Canary led. And to your earlier point about, you know, we're switching out the team sort of with the different arcs, it makes sense because if you keep, especially like a Harley around too long, she pulls focus, as Tyra would say. She's in a group shot. Your eye is drawn to her. I like that we're going to keep sort of Canary and whatever squad she has at that moment moving through the DC world and kind of taking some of the best bits, but it's always about whatever objective Dinah and her core group are trying to achieve at that moment. But yeah, the Seam stuff and John stuff, just I was thrilled. I giggled like a child when I saw him.
Yeah. And something I'm very excited about is the arc of Sin, because Sin is a relatively new character in the comics. The idea is that she was raised by the Assassin's Guild and broke away from them at a young age when she was like 10 or 11 and is now being hunted by them because you can't just break away from the Assassin's Guild. And Canary kind of adopted her as her sister, but she's also kind of like a surrogate mother to her. And so she's hidden Sin in various places throughout the past years. Like now Sin is about 16 years old. So the past 5 years, she's been hiding her in various places to keep her safe. But because of that, Sin has lived a very boring, quiet life. And while she totally understands the situation, part of her has always yearned to have a real life out there with Canary, living life. And not to give too much away, but there's the possibility that that life can happen going forward in this series. So I'm really excited to see what they do with that character.
What I love, it's like, okay, obviously in your friend group, people must discuss what's up with Bruce and these children. And when anybody's taking a mentor, it can go good, bad, people lose arms, not looking at you, Ollie, looking at you a little bit. And I'm sure for her thinking, I'm taking on like kind of like a mentee, guardian, ward, protector situation. I have many great examples of what not to do in my friend group, but in her attempt to kind of overcorrect and avoid their mistakes, she, out of Sin's isolation, created a risk that she couldn't perceive. But I'm going to say, I still think she's the better guardian. If I'm looking for a foster someone to watch a pet of all of my choices in DC, I would still go Dinah over any of the guys.
No,
really.
Totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's been a number of men and women that have made the mistake of like exposing the person they care for too much. And she went the opposite, which
for
the most part, up until the Amazons got tricked, was a working plan. I think it's the beginning of issue 2 where we get the flashback with Canary and Sin, when shortly after she has saved Sin and is taking care of her, they're sitting there in the mountains and they're having hot dogs, and Sin just loves hot dogs. And they have this really heart to heart about how, you know, Canary's like, I'm really sorry that, you know, I'm keeping you here, but it's to keep you safe. You're being hunted. And she's like, I understand. And she goes, can I ask you a question? And Canary says, okay, as long as it's not about Pokemon. You know, it's like, oh, it's a funny little joke. But then she goes, okay, never mind then. So the question was about Pokemon, which I loved. I love that moment. Of course, there's a nice moment where she goes, okay, fine, just one question sort of thing to show that. But I just love the fact that the question was about Pokemon. It's like, yeah, she's a kid. It makes sense. It wasn't like some question of like, well, how long do I have to live like this or anything like that? It was specifically about Pokemon, which I thought was a nice little switch on the, you know, usually with those flashback scenes, it always ends up being like a very like heartfelt or disparaging question that needs to be answered that would then cut without Canary answering it. But instead, you know, it's played for familial humor, which I really liked and made me actually like Canary and Sin's connection even more. Like they felt more like a real family, in my opinion.
But a family I'd actually like to hang out with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
You know what? There are some out there. You just haven't met them.
Actually, you know what? Your mother's a real sweetheart. She's adorable.
There we go.
I will say, under my propensity for nostalgia, the first four did occasionally, especially with Cassie's fit, give me like just hints to shade of Darwin. But then 5 was like, what is happening here? And then there's one shot of Dinah's face and I'm like, it's Fathom, it's Michael Turner, may he also rest. And it's just like these two sort of like artists that, again, they were very particular in their style, also inspired by those who came before them. But then just reading this, like the story is so good, but then the art is so precise and thoughtful and works with the story, but then it's still just giving me that nostalgia hug as well and improving on it. It's not just like pastiche, it's evolving. It's
right.
It's miraculous. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's I think it's a great series. If you're really looking for a superhero series that has fun action, has great characters, that has a feeling of nostalgia in it, but is also doing something new. And if you're a Kelly Thompson fan, Kelly is continuing her ability to write really fun group dynamics with this series. I think you should definitely check it out. And Petula, I can't wait for you to read issue 6 to find out what you think of it.
I'm saving it for the weekend. I'm having one of my weekend comic dates with my friend. We're going to go to Sidekick and probably drink too many Peter Parkers. And I'm saving it for that trip.
There we go. Fantastic. All right. So this has been Black Issue Bloodbath. Petula, where can people find you?
At anatif.com, on social things at Obesa Kantawit, OBESACANTAVIT, and here with you.
Of course, you can find everything I do over at geekcardshow.com. Follow me on Twitter at geekcard. Follow me on Instagram at Andrew_of_geek_hard. Follow this very show on Facebook at Black Issue Bloodbath, where we post a new episode every week. But the easiest way to make sure you don't miss an episode is just to subscribe to us on your podcasting platform of choice, because then it comes to you every week. And you'll be like, oh, it's Wednesday. Oh, there's Back Issue Bloodbath flooding my ears and getting me excited about comics. I may go to a comic shop later. I may read some comics later. I may think about my favorite stories later. Who knows? We're here to help, is what I'm saying. If you're a comic fan, we're here to help. This has been Back Issue Bloodbath. I've been Andrew Young.
I'm Antonio.
Have yourself a good...